I'm Michelle Martin. This is Tell Me More from NPR News. Later, we'll have a visit with our woman in East Africa. NPR's Gwen Tompkins is just in from Nairobi, and she'll tell us what's going on the continent. But first, how many of us can honestly say we knew anything about HPV a few months ago? But now it's all over the news. HPV, the human papillomavirus, is known to cause cervical cancer. But a new study being published today in the New England Journal of Medicine says the virus may be linked to an increased risk of throat cancer. To talk more about this, we turn first to Dr. Richard Schlegel. He's chair of the Department of Pathology at Georgetown University, and to Tamika Felder. She is a cervical cancer survivor and the founder of Tamika and Friends. It was created to raise awareness of HPV. Welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Good morning.
Thank you.
And Dr. Schlegel, first to you, how does HPV cause cervical cancer, and how would it cause throat cancer?
Well, the virus actually has two oncogenes that are important in stimulating cells to grow in an unregulated way. And that virus can cause cancers not only in the genital sites, but in oral epithelium as well, like in the throat.
Okay. So, and Dr. Schlegel, I should mention that your research helped lead to a vaccine called Gardasil, which is now being offered to across the country as a way to prevent cervical cancer. I should mention that Georgetown University is the owner of the patent on the vaccine. That's correct, isn't it?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. There's a lot of discussion in many states about whether the vaccine should be required for girls. Do you think that that should be required, knowing what we know about the link and also about the possibility of the link to throat cancer?
Mm. Right. Well, that's not my area of expertise to go into sort of legal and social aspects, but I think eventually it would be a good idea in the not-too-distant future to make it mandatory, because it will have a tremendous impact, not only for us in our country, on genital and oral cancers, but worldwide. And I think that very soon we'll have data on millions of people rather than thousands that will show its efficacy and safety.
Now, the vaccine is being directed to girls to this point, because obviously girls get cervical cancer, boys don't. But does this new research on throat cancer indicate that perhaps people should consider having boys take it as well?
Yeah, I think there's a very good reason for that. And it's just certainly there are about as many cases of the oral cancers are of cervical cancer. There are also laryngeal tumors that are caused by it, and also anal cancers. So it'll have more of an impact generally than we appreciate, and for both boys as well as girls.
And the throat cancer would be linked to oral sex?
Yes.
Is that accurate? Okay. Tamika, I want to bring you in. When you first learned that you had cervical cancer, had you even heard of HPV?
No, I had no idea what it was, and no one mentioned it to me. How I found about the link between HPV and cervical cancer is I got on the internet, and every time I put cervical cancer in a search engine, those letters came up, and this long word that I couldn't pronounce at the time, the human papillomavirus. And it scared me to death, because every time I saw HPV, I was like, what is this, HIV, some form of it? And I just didn't know. And then I remembered, because I didn't believe that I had cancer, several of the second opinions that I got. One doctor kind of mentioned HPV 16 or 18, but he wasn't really talking to me. He was flipping his chart, talking to himself, and I was following behind him like a lost little puppy dog, because, again, I was 25. I couldn't believe that something like this happened to me. And I sought more information. You know, I just wanted to know, how could this happen to someone like me, who is an educated woman, didn't have a risky lifestyle, and I had never heard anything about it. I was familiar with breast cancer, lung cancer, many different types of cancers, but cervical cancer wasn't one of them.
I'm sorry, Tamika, since you've been cancer-free now for how long? What, 5 years?
6 years, almost 6 years.
Almost 6 years. Congratulations.
Thank you.
But part of what you do now as a volunteer, as an activist, is try to raise awareness. And as I mentioned earlier, that this issue now has been in the news. Have you noticed over the time you've been working in this field that more people are now aware of HPV?
A lot more people are aware of HPV, but the general public still does not have the information they need to really guard themselves about it. You know, Merck came out with their Gardasil commercials with the Tell Someone campaign, which was great because it said in there, did you know that cervical cancer was linked to an STD? But the problem with that, I think, is that we have this vaccine, you know, and there wasn't enough education done before that. Obviously, groups like mine, we try to get out there and educate as many people as possible. You know, so the vaccine has helped to bring more national attention to HPV and its link to cervical cancer, but there's still people in the dark.
Okay, well, I want to bring another voice into the conversation, but before I do, Tamika, do you think, then I know you're a layperson, but if this vaccine had been available before you got cancer, do you think you would have wanted to take it?
Oh, absolutely. I would have hoped if the vaccine was available before and my mother had done research, because I would never tell anybody to inject their daughter or their young child with anything without doing the research. And if my mother, you know, because the other problem we have in certain communities, we don't have access to good health care. So if the vaccine was available back then and my mother was educated about it and did her research, yeah, I would have hoped that she would have gotten it for me.
But everybody has access to abstinence. So what about promoting abstinence as a way to protect yourself, since this is a sexually transmitted disease?
Well, abstinence is great, but the reality is human beings are sexual by nature. And you can promote abstinence, but there are a lot of children out there, well, I should say teenagers, who feel like having oral sex is abstinence to them because they're not vaginally penetrated. They feel like they're not having sex. Mm-hmm. And that's when things like throat cancer because of HPV becomes a problem.
Okay. All right, let's
go. There's miseducation among teenagers and their friends talking. They're not going to a parent or an older sister or someone for advice. They're seeking it from their peers.
Okay, well, thanks. All right, thanks, Tamika. I'm going to bring in another voice now. I'd like to hear from Rebecca Rex. She is co-founder of Parents Requesting Open Vaccine Education, which is based in Texas. She's joining us on the phone from Houston. Ms. Rex, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
I understand that you have some skepticism about the is it the vaccination itself, or is it the mandatory vaccination proposals that are gaining currency across the country?
Well, we primarily oppose the mandate. However, as Tamika said, we absolutely support education about the vaccine and about the disease. We feel that that is the only way people can make responsible and most accurate health care choices for themselves and their families. We do not oppose the existence of the vaccine, and we do not oppose the use of the vaccine by choice. We simply oppose the forced administration or forced use of the vaccine.
These two studies in the New England Journal of Medicine, there were actually two studies published today. One, of course, establishes that there's a strong link between HPV and throat cancer. The second suggests that the vaccine is, in fact, highly effective. Do either of those studies, do either of those findings affect your thinking, Ms. Rex?
No, they don't change how we feel about a mandate. The second study that you mentioned that speaks to the additional effectiveness of it or the effectiveness of it in the women still did not include anyone under the age of 15. So to date, we have about 1,100 girls under the age of 15 that were even looked at for safety, efficacy. What we know about the vaccine is that the drug company does not know the duration of immunity. So if we start this at a young age, which, you know, obviously is the most sensible thing to do, these girls may lose protection from the vaccine as they become sexually active, which could put them at greater risk because they have a false sense of security before they understand that they're no longer protected.
Let's bring Dr. Schlegel back to talk to that. Dr. Schlegel, can you speak to either of those concerns?
Well, with respect to the last one, it's true we don't know how long immunity will last, but it lasts at least in a very enduring fashion for 5 years. That doesn't mean that it will only last 5 years. I know that there have been articles in the Washington Times saying that we shouldn't immunize too early because we'll lose effectiveness when people get married or become sexually active in their later teens. But we don't know how long it will last. With one vaccination and two boosts, it could go on 10 years, 15 years, we don't know. In the animal models that we've done with dogs over the last 17 years, just two injections last a lifetime. So I anticipate that these titers will stay sufficiently high, potentially for a decade or so.
But Dr. Schlegel, why vaccinate at age 11? I think the recommendation was somewhere between 9 and 11. Why so young? Why not wait till 15 or 16?
Well, if you look at the statistics on when boys and girls become sexually active, that's when it begins, is the early teens. So if you want to protect someone at age 13, you better be vaccinating around 11 and 12. And so that's the rationale for beginning at that time period.
Okay. And Rebecca Wicks, what about what Tamika pointed out, that whether parents like it or not, wish it were so, a lot of kids are sexually active at a young age. They think that oral sex isn't sex. And as a consequence of that, perhaps it really does make sense to offer this additional, firewall, if you will. What would you say to that?
Well, I agree with her that we have a lot of parents in denial about the behavior of their children. And I do believe that as families, we need to take a close look at what we're teaching our children and when, because I think the best protection for any of these kids would be honest information so that they can be responsible, you know, for protecting themselves from a risky behavior. I do not believe that mandating this vaccine is going to necessarily protect them. There are many sexually transmitted diseases that lead to other problems. And I think that the smart thing to do would be to educate our children to the realities of sexual mm-hmm. behavior, all types of sexual behavior. Because again, just as the doctor said, we don't know how long this will protect them. And mm-hmm. even if it will, you know, some people may not seroconvert. Some people mm-hmm. may derive no benefit from this.
Okay. Rebecca Rex, thank you so much for joining us and offering that perspective.
Thank you.
Rebecca Rex is co-founder of Parents Requesting Open Vaccine Education. She joined us on the phone from Houston. And we were also joined by Tamika Felder. She is a cancer survivor, founder of Tamika and Friends. Thank you, Tamika, for joining us. And we were also joined by Dr. Richard Slagle. He is chair of the Department of Pathology at Georgetown University. Dr. Slagle, thank you for joining us.